streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Hey, Keely.
Hey, Chris.
Welcome to Heard It on the Sidelines.
Heard it
on the sideline with Shotgun Spratling.
Welcome to the newest edition of the Heard It on the Sidelines podcast. That's right. You heard. It's back. It's basketball season, so we had to bring it back. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling. Alongside me, Chris Trevino is jumping on with me. He's actually going to take over the host duties here in a minute. It's a little bit of a weird podcast. Just want to do a little bit of a preview podcast going into conference play. USC opens conference play starting today. And that's surprising when you hear that because it's only December. But it's early December, and the Pac-12 announced last year that they were going to do 20-game conference seasons. So they added two games to their regular season schedule for conference games, and that meant they had to go in earlier in the schedule. Last year, USC was actually scheduled to play in November 30th, I believe it was. But because of the pandemic, everything got moved around a little bit. So this is the first time they're playing these games as early as they are in this season. So USC will play Utah tonight at 8:30 p.m., late-night game. But the Trojans will take on the Utes. Craig Smith taking over the program for Larry Krystkowiak, who was fired last season. We'll see what the Utes have in their first year under Craig Smith, who came over from Utah State. So it should be an interesting matchup to see where they're at, where the Trojans are at as they start conference play. But Chris, just want to throw it over to you. Let you take control of this podcast and see where you take us.
This is fascinating. First of all, when was the last Heard It? It feels like 2 years?
No,
is
not
that
2 years.
Accurate?
That's inaccurate. It was during the March Madness run or right after the March
That's
Madness
true.
Run.
That's true. That feels like 2 years ago.
Because I recorded two of them in the hotel in Indianapolis during USC's March to the Elite Eight. Terrific season. Second time that they made it to the Elite Eight since the NCAA expanded in 1974 to, I think, 32 teams at that time. And then eventually it was 48, 64. Now it's 68. But USC has not been in this situation where they're the big dog. UCLA also, obviously, the Final Four run, they bring everybody back, big time opportunity for them to, you know, build on the established culture that they used to have, and they're trying to get back under Mick Cronin. They come into the season number two in the preseason polls. You know, they have a clunker against Gonzaga, which looked a lot like USC's game against Gonzaga in the Elite Eight, where the first 8 minutes or so, Gonzaga just takes complete control, takes a 20-point lead, and just kind of cruises the rest of the way and ends up with a 20-point win, kind of how the USC game played out, also how the UCLA game played out. So it was kind of interesting seeing that game and being like, I feel like I've seen this before.
You have.
Except I was, it was in person last time. But yeah, it was interesting to see where the Bruins are at. They'll be really interesting. The Pac-12 could be a fascinating race. Arizona's playing really well. Oregon not playing really well. And some teams that, you know, where are they going to be at? Arizona State, Utah, Colorado, some teams that are, it's a changing of the guard for the Colorados and a little bit of Arizona State losing Remy Martin and losing McKinley Wright. But some other programs on the rise. I think Utah getting Craig Smith, I think that they're going to be a team that should surprise some people a little bit this year, as well as Washington State. I think they'll surprise some people. That's where USC actually goes on Saturday. We'll be in Berkeley. And somehow we're going to have to find this game on TV on a Pac-12 network.
So I'm sure we'll find it.
Hopefully our Airbnb has a Pac-12 networks, because that game will be in the afternoon, but we'll be in Berkeley because of this random extra scheduled, rescheduled game for USC and Cal. And Lincoln Riley will be probably there watching and seeing, I wonder what this team's going to look like. Do I want any of these players? Do I want to keep any of these guys?
Shotgun just bounced all around at different things in a matter of seconds. So I just want to grab back to what you were just talking about with conference play, and conference play starting tomorrow, this week, today.
Conference play starting today.
Yes. There you go. See, he's the world's best basketball USC beat writer. He keeps me on track. But this is one of my questions I had for later, but let's just get to it now because you already touched on it. Obviously, in the Pac-12, everyone's talking UCLA. Mm-hmm. Deservingly so, after what they did last year, had a bunch of people coming back, had a great recruiting class. Let's just get to the point. Do you think, after seeing this team's just really early, can USC compete with UCLA for the Pac-12 title? Or is it just UCLA or bust? What are your early thoughts on that?
I picked UCLA in my preseason poll. I also put USC at 3 behind Oregon, Now, Oregon, they've struggled so far, but they always bring in a lot of new guys, and sometimes there's some early season struggles, and then Dana Altman is a really good coach that, you know, gets guys to buy in, and eventually they play a lot better as the season progresses. I thought that UCLA, I thought the addition of Miles Johnson, the transfer from Rutgers, engineering major, really smart kid from Southern California, came back to California to finish up his college career. I thought the addition of him was what was missing from UCLA last year that enabled USC to dominate them. To dominate them at home and then beat them on the road, coming back after they really struggled early in the game and had to, you know, get woken up by Chris Capco, the now associate head coach, you know, just all over them in a timeout that we could hear him across the court, up to, you know, flights of bleachers. Granted, there was no fans in attendance, but basically hear every word he was saying, chewing them out. So I think that the one thing that they were missing last year is rim protection. They had Cody Riley, but he's more of a power forward rather than a center. And against Evan Mobley, they had no answer. And then Evan Mobley was able to distribute to other guys. And, you know, he could pull out Cody Riley a little bit away from the basket and just open things up. I think with Miles Johnson, that makes it that much more difficult for USC. I think this USC team, though, I think it's going to be two battles when those two teams play, and maybe a third one in the Pac-12 tournaments somewhere along the way, because both these teams are going to be focused on defense. USC has always been has been locked in on defense for 2.5 years now. UCLA, they're up and down a little bit, and if USC catches them, I don't think they will because of the rivalry and everything, but that's the big thing for them. If Johnny Juzang is playing some defense and, you know, they're locked in, that is what makes them difficult, and that's what gave them the ability to go on that Final Four run last year, is that they finally started playing defense, and they hit some free throws late, which is why USC was able to come back and beat them at the buzzer with Taj Eady, and why they lost in the Pac-12 tournament. I just remember watching that game. It was before a USC game, and they had like three chances to end the game on regulation, I think it was, and then Oregon State beats them, and, you know, Jules Bernard was just stunned. He just stood on the court, just didn't know what to do, and you're like, UCLA, is their season over? Nope. First four to Final Four.
Not at all.
So, and I think that experience, same with USC, I think both of their experiences is huge for them. Oregon and Oregon State a little bit less because, you know, they made it to the Sweet 16 as well, but I think they lost some really key pieces off their teams. I mean, all these teams except UCLA lost really big pieces. UCLA brought everybody back. USC, obviously, replacing Evan Mobley. Huge question marks coming into the season, but I've been really impressed with what they've done so far. So I think the USC can contend for that Pac-12 championship. There'll be a couple slip-ups along the way, I'm sure, you know, but I think they can be there at the end against UCLA, and hey, if it comes down to the end of the season and they're playing each other, I think that's going to be, the arenas are just going to be going mad crazy, especially after last year not being able to see these two teams play.
Absolutely. That scene should be electric, to say the least. As you can see, I have the easiest host job in the nation. Just put something out there, let him talk for 15 minutes. It's such an easy gig. But let's move on a little bit more. What has just been your biggest overreaction to this team?
Biggest overreaction. I feel like I stay pretty even keel.
I know. You're pretty good, but I'm sure there's something maybe you've looked at as like, hey, this could be something down the line. Maybe USC fans shouldn't get too excited about this, or maybe they should. I don't know if there's something that's like you've seen that's like, that's really interesting. Or something like that.
I don't know exactly how to answer it. I'm gonna say the thing that still scares me the most about this team, because I've been really impressed with what they played. They haven't played the greatest competition, but they went on the road to Temple. You know, they went on the road to Florida Gulf Coast, and that place was hopping because it was the Dunk City reunion. They played San Diego State. They played two teams from Philly. I think this is actually the thing that has been the most interesting to me. They played two teams from Philly. They played San Diego State, who's a really good defensive program. They're always good on defense. USC has not been bullied. You play teams from Philadelphia, and they want to bully you. They want to push you around. Temple tried to do – Villanova in the exhibition 2 years ago tried to do the same thing. Temple, they try to do some small things like, you know, grab the ball away from you after your ref has already called a foul or something like that. Small things like bumps after the whistle.
It's just the Philly love.
Yeah, just trying to kind of establish that, hey, we're the dominant force here. You're the little guy coming in, and USC was having none of it. Now, USC had a big lead in that game, and Temple shrank it. I think that was because the referees, the whistles kind of changed completely in the second half. USC, it took a little bit of time to adjust, so I think that's a learning experience there for them. But I think that's been the most interesting thing, is that this team is not getting punked by anybody. I don't care who, if it's a Big Ten team coming in, a Big East team, doesn't matter. This team, and I think it's because of the interesting dynamic that they have, the interesting mix on this roster of some of those super seniors. Chavez Goodwin, not backing down to anybody. Isaiah White, not backing down to anybody. So you got two guys right there that have been to multiple schools, have been through a cadre of different experiences in their college careers. And then you got Isaiah Mobley, who's a potential NBA draft pick, and Boogie Ellis, a guy who's been at Memphis, so he's played in some big games. And Drew Peterson is, so you got all these different dynamics on this team, and I think they've gelled really well together. And so I think it's very interesting. They stick up for each other, but no one's backing down from any contact. No one's, playing timid. And that's something, I say that word because Joshua Morgan had an amazing weekend in the Wooden Legacy tournament down in Anaheim. Was fantastic in the first game. I think he had something like 13 points career high for him at USC and 6 rebounds career high for him at USC. Second game, he had some big rebounds, some big blocks, didn't have the points necessarily. But last year, he was so timid, they could never play him. Like, he struggled to catch the ball at times. This year, he's playing with so much more confidence, and I thought it was really interesting the way he came out, and he's attacking and getting fouled several times. He had 6 consecutive free throws for USC, and made 5 of the 6 in one point of that St. Joseph's game. That shows me how much he's improved and how his confidence has been built up, and they're going to need to rely on him because both of those games they got one of their bigs in foul trouble early and had to go to him, and it was like there was no fall off. So I thought that was really interesting, and the USC team as a whole, they're not backing down from anybody.
Can't get bullied.
You can't. If you get bullied in basketball, then
it's going to be a long. As me being a smaller person on the court, I get bullied a lot.
When you get what happens when you get bullied is then you start settling for shots. Mm-hmm. You don't attack. You don't want to get that contact. You don't want to get knocked to the ground. So suddenly you just start taking jump shots. And not all of those are clean because you're not attacking enough. Dribble penetration, drawing someone in, dishing it out, the kickouts and whatnot, and getting those open looks. So then your offense becomes stagnant. That's when you go on those long lulls. And I think that's been an interesting thing so far. And again, talked about the competition level a little bit, but 6 games in, USC hasn't had any really long stretches where they've gone without a field goal. They've been able to find a way and manufacture a way where if they're not making a couple shots, they can get the ball inside and find Chavez Goodwin or Isaiah Mobley and get a bucket.
We're going to keep it flowing. Keep it flowing. I want to talk about this freshman class that came in. Obviously, it's not like the 2020 class. We had a bunch of transfers. You had a mega star in like an Evan Mobley. This one was just four players, one being a transfer, Boogie Ellis. I'm not really factoring him in this because obviously we know he's been a stud early on. So you got 3, Malik Thomas, Harrison Hornery, Kobe Johnson, a top 40 class, number 39 in our rankings, number 5 in the Pac-12. Not a big time player, but what have you thought of these freshmen so far early on? And what do you think the ceiling is for these guys? Do you feel like any of them could emerge down the stretch late in the season? Someone could come on and start being a contributor. What are your early takes on these 3 freshmen?
So I want to throw Reece Dixon Waters in that mix as well. So he was actually a part of this class originally. He became an early enrollee last year because the pandemic, there were the unknowns if, Southern California basketball was going to play. So he came early. But he really played a couple games, played a couple minutes, really didn't do much. He got to learn the plays a little bit, I'm sure. But as far as getting playing time, getting experience, didn't have it. So I'm going to include him in this mix because he's a young guy. And I feel like he's on the same level as his other 3 guys. I've been pretty impressed by the group because there's so much depth and so much talent on this team. It's the deepest team that Andy Enfield's had at USC. It's the deepest USC team that since I've been at USC, for sure. So that's 12 years now or so. Going back to some of the Tim Floyd teams, maybe they had a little bit more depth. I would have to really look at those rosters to see what numbers 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, because USC can go 11 to 13 deep if they really want to. Now, Harrison Hornery is a guy that coming out of high school, I saw him several times and I said, he's going to need some time to develop. He's much bigger than I anticipated him being as a freshman, and he's a junkyard dog. He just goes out there and he finds rebounds. He's always kind of in the right place, plays good defense for you, and he's a big that can shoot. So, maybe if they play a team and they need a zone buster, maybe he's a guy that they throw in there. So there's a role for him. Now, he's not going to play a ton of minutes, but maybe there's a role for him there. Kobe Johnson has actually been a guy. He's a three-star kid. Now, he's the younger brother of, I can't remember his brother's name. Went to Duke last year. I'm blanking on his name. So he's got good lineage there. His brother, obviously, is a big-time player as well. But Kobe Johnson, three-star guy, not a lot of hype coming in. But he's 6'6", he's long, he's athletic, and he can play the lead guard position. So they're using him to bring up the ball, to run the offense, and he's a gamer. He plays good defense. He's been one of the first freshmen off the bench, you know, of that true class, because he plays defense, and that's what it takes to get on the field, or on the court, excuse me. And that's one of the reasons why I don't think we've seen much of Malik Thomas yet. That was the area where he's got to grow the most, is on the defensive end. Now, he's the California Gatorade State Player of the Year last year. Phenomenal season at Damien. He's a guy that can get buckets whenever he comes in. Hey, maybe you need some instant offense later in the year, or you're just struggling in a game or something, and maybe he's a guy that comes in and just, you know, can go get his own shot. But that's the area where he's going to continue to grow on the defensive end. And that's the thing about this program now, is if you don't play defense, you don't play. Andy Enfield said that those exact words after the last game, when someone asked him, hey, do you think your defense is as far along as you would have anticipated? He said, yeah, because if you don't play defense, you don't play here. So, you know, they don't have any prima donnas on the team. One of the things I love about Malik Thomas is you worry. You know, 11, 12, 13 on the depth chart. You know, once you start getting into conference play now, you know, how much playing time are those guys going to get?
That bench tightens up.
Yeah, exactly. And you go, ooh, those guys going to start, you know, being disgruntled? Are they going to, you know, if they're not getting played time now, do they start looking at the transfer portal after the season? Those type of things you worry about, because these are going to be important players for USC in this program for the next few years. And Malik Thomas is one of the most invested guys on the bench. I love the fact, I noticed it and really, you know, paid attention to it during the Thanksgiving tournament and just watched him. And like, there was one time, I think it was Isaiah Mobley, it was one of the older guys, was like, hey, dude, he's like grabbing him by the chest and like pushing him back. He's like, I'm trying to watch the play down here. You're up cheering. I need you to calm down a little bit. But that was a kind of a cool moment just to see how invested he is and how, you know, he's cheering on his teammates and everything. That's what you want to see from your bench guys, you know, especially guys that you know have a really bright future that you anticipate, you know, being key players for you going down the line. And you want to see them invested early. That means they're putting in the work. The Andy Enfield actually opened up the practices this year during their fall camp. So I got to go a couple times and, you know, once or twice a week to kind of check them out. It was kind of eye-opening and enlightening to see them working with these freshmen. Really hard on them, especially on the defensive end for someone like Malik Thomas. But just see constantly working with him, constantly, you know, the conversation back and forth. Malik Thomas asking a ton of questions about where he needs to be. Sometimes it's just him, he's forgetting. And there's a lot of stuff that's being implemented early in a fall camp. And, you know, freshmen are take a little bit of time to catch up. But I just love the fact that he was constantly willing, you know, whenever a coach is getting on him, he's listening to it. He's taking the advice, taking the criticism, asking questions and trying to get better constantly. So I was really impressed by that. So we'll see him down the road eventually. He's going to be a future star for USC, I think. And then the other one, the one that's the bonus, is Restix and Waters, a guy that didn't play at all last year. And I had some kind of concerns about him, like I did with Joshua Morgan, is, you know, is he going to be aggressive enough? And you see in practice, that's just not his mentality. But then when he gets into games, he just goes for it. And, you know, he's playing really good defense, so he's getting some minutes as well. He's slowly coming along. He's been one of their top three-point shooters percentage-wise so far. Has knocked down, I think, 3 of 6 or, you know, 4 of 7, something like that. So he's been knocking down some shots for them early. I think that's just an extra addition, because some of their starters are actually struggled shooting threes. That some of the guys that they were expecting to count on have been a little slow to get off out of the gates so far this season from distance.
Side note that has nothing of value. Reese Dixon Waters, great name.
Yeah, I like it.
It can get jumbly, though, if you say it too fast. You can get stumbled up.
Do you go with an abbreviation then?
I was trying to think of one. Yeah, I just feel like I'd mess that up too, but like Reese Dixon Waters just sounds like it's borderline like an R&B singer's name.
Or it could be like RD Dub.
Yeah, I like that. We'll try that out. I'll try that out when we move through the season.
We'll work it.
Only 6 games played, but mm-hmm. Shotgun, who's your MVP through 6 games?
Ooh, that's a really good question.
Yeah.
I don't like when you ask these questions. Yeah, pause.
Yeah, that's how I know it's a good one.
I see you flexing over there.
I'm just working out the just getting ready.
I mean, I think the MVP, initially I went through like 4 guys in my mind, 4 different starters, and didn't even think about the 5th one. Or I went through three different starters. Didn't think about the fourth one. I think Chavez Goodwin is actually the MVP right now. I mean, he's averaging, looking at the stats here, he's averaging 13.2 points, 7.5 rebounds. USC, I believe, is undefeated, or maybe they have one loss when he scores in double digits through his both seasons at USC. Obviously, last year, he was a backup behind Evan Mobley. So trying to find his way, coming over from Wofford, played at College of Charleston early in his career. So his third different school. But he's fit in terrifically. Everyone loves him. He doesn't really talk a bunch of smack on the court. He talks a bunch on the court, though. And that's really important, especially on the defensive end. He is constantly chattering. Between him and Boogie Ellis, you know, if you were on court, you would never, there's never any silence between those two guys. They're constantly talking about screens, talking about, you know, I got this guy that got in the corner, you got your help here, all those type of things, constantly talking on defense, which is obviously a huge key. And he's doing it, he's being super efficient. You know, he's shooting 67% right now from the field.
Whew.
And a lot of, some of that is layups and dunks, but it's not just like he's getting all these handoffs and, hey, you go dunk right here and there's no defender. His baby hook game, I'm so jealous of it. I had a baby hook in high school when I played. It's my favorite shot.
It's mine as well. That's what I was taller than everyone in middle school, so I would just baby hook the crap out of everyone. Now it doesn't work so much, but baby hooks all day.
Well, you can use that baby hook to keep away from the defense.
It's just fun to say baby hook, big baby hook.
And I think that's part of the reason why he has that so strong, because he's 6'9", which is good size, but it's not 7 foot. You're giving up a couple inches. He doesn't have quite the length of the Mobley brothers or some of the guys on this team, but he just finishes. His ability to finish by the rim, when they get the ball down to him inside the painted circle, you know, he's finishing those plays. Some of the other guys may miss. You know, you've seen some guys throughout Andy Enfield's tenure. You'd be like, oh man, how do you miss so many bunnies? Chavez Goodwin's not that guy. 67%. Just gotta fix those free throws. Free throws have always been an issue for him, but he's shooting 35% right now. But he's killing it on the glass. He's leading the team with 20 offensive rebounds through six games. So he's averaging over 3 offensive rebounds per game. So he's been my MVP so far because of the strides from where he was at last year to where he's at now.
Great answers. Keep it moving. Early impressions of Mr. Boogie Ellis, the big high-profile transfer, you know, guy who could be a difference maker for this team. What's going on? Break down Boogie. What have you thought?
Boogie!
I wasn't ready for that.
He's been spectacular for him. I mean, he's leading scorer at 14.5 points. He's shooting over 40% on three-pointers. He's got tremendous range. He can get to the basket. He can create for other people. He's not being selfish. He's not taking shots where you're just like, oh, come on, pass the ball. Those type of shots, it's not, you know, hero ball for him. He's fit in. He's playing really good defense. He's gotten some steals and some breakaway dunks because of it. Right now, he's got 20 assists with 9 turnovers. USC as a team, their turnover numbers are terrific. 52 turnovers through 6 games. So, you know, under 10 is always the goal, and USC's averaging that right now. You know, and that starts with Boogie Ellis because he's been the primary ball handler for him and Drew Peterson and Ethan Anderson as well. But him and Drew Peterson are the primary ones. Those two guys combined have 19 turnovers in 6 games. So not too bad. The guys that are going to have the ball, you know, 75% of the time. So, yeah, I've been really impressed with him. I think the way he's fit into the culture of USC. He's bought in on the defensive end. And, you know, that's some of the things that you read from Memphis fans when, you know, he committed. Like, well, good luck with him. You're never going to see him do this or this or this. And he's completely bought in, been a team player. And, you know, I think the relationships that he already had with Max Agamapolo and Isaiah Mobley and those guys that were in that recruiting class together, there's a kind of infamous photo of them together with Onyeka Okongwu. And that was going to be the recruiting class, which they ended up getting Ethan Anderson in, and they got some guy named Drake London, who
some guy named Drake.
I don't know if you've heard of him.
I might have. You know, it sounds familiar.
I'm still a small tear going down my eye from the injury to this year, but yeah, Drake London as well was in that class. So it was a remarkable class for USC, and Boogie Ellis was the piece that they were really wanted to get, but ended up not being able to close the deal with. But to get him a couple years later, I think he's been huge for them, and he's a guy that he will be very important for them when they get to March. Because he can get buckets on his own if you need at the end of a game. And you want USC to move the ball and do all those things, but sometimes it comes out at crunch time. You need a guy to make a shot. Boogie Ellis can make a shot if you need him to.
Where have you seen Isaiah Mobley take the biggest step so far?
That's an interesting question. The biggest step for him, I think leadership. Man, if you watch a practice or if you pay enough attention to him in a game, he is constantly teaching everyone else. He is the guy that knows everything. Like, he'll go to Capco or he'll go to his dad and have a discussion one-on-one about, okay, what on this play? And then he'll go explain it to multiple other guys. So I think his leadership has been immense. Now, I think him going to the draft combine, him seeing his brother, going to the draft himself with his brother and kind of seeing how everything played out, I think that's just motivation for him. Especially Evan's off to a great start now that he's back from the injury. I think that's motivation, but also he learned some stuff during that draft combine and stuff, like different ways that he can score, different things he can do. He's not staying at the three-point line. He's not relying on that too much. He's not doing any one thing too much. He's showing his versatility. He can create for others. He's doing that pretty good. The high-low passes from him to Josh Morgan and Chavez Goodwin have been fantastic. Anytime a team goes to zone, they get the ball to Mobley in the middle. He can either knock down that jumper at the free throw line, or he's can drive it, or he can just dish it off. There's so many options with him there. He's such a unique player, similar to how his brother was. You can't play zone against USC if those guys are killing you in the middle, even if USC's not shooting great from outside, which they have been a little bit up and down so far this season.
This might be a dumb question, but I'm going to throw it out anyway. Obviously, USC picked up such critical and valuable experience last year, mm-hmm. just with that run and just experiencing that. And, you know, in sports, experience is so critical, especially in basketball, you know, just a limited amount of guys on the court and just having that connection together and having gone through some tough games and pulling out close games and big games like that at an NCAA tournament could be invaluable. And have you seen, you know, that experience that they picked up last year? Have you seen that, like, the maturity come out on the court in any, I know it's just only been six games, but have you seen little moments where, like, oh, I don't think a team that has gone through what they've done would do that this year? Or have you seen them sort of respond, you know, differently than they would for a team that hasn't gone through that?
I think it goes back to the toughness and not being bullied. I think when you have that experience and you're going up against a team that wants to try to get you emotional, wants to try to get it chippy a little bit because they're less talented. You know, if you're a less talented team, you try to bring down a team's talent level by making them more emotional. That when emotions rise, I can't remember the exact saying, when emotions rise, decision-making drops or something like that. That's a common saying in sports that I obviously don't know.
You butcher a little bit.
Enough that I can't remember it right now. But yeah, you know what I'm trying to say here. But I think that's the biggest thing, that they've showed their depth. You know, there's 8, 9, 10 guys playing every game and contributing. And you're seeing those freshmen get in there as well. But you're not seeing guys that are, at least not from the outside in, you're not seeing guys upset. You know, Isaiah White, you know, he's playing 17 minutes this year. You know, he's only started one game. He started pretty much every game last year, except for maybe one or two. So he's a guy that could be complaining or pouting on the end of the bench. No, he's being a leader on the end of the bench. He's helping those young guys as well, taking his role. It's not the same role as it was last year, but you know, he's taking it and running with what he's got there. So I think it's really interesting to see some of those players that are a little bit further down the depth chart, maybe were starters previously in their career, are all kind of fitting in where they can.
I know we're coming at the end of our podcast, so I got a couple more questions. These are more NCAA looking towards the postseason big picture.
Okay.
Is that cool?
Sure.
USC makes it back to the second week or makes a big run in March, if blank. Fill it in for me.
If they make some shots, because I think the defense is going to be there regardless. So I think that was the big thing last year for that run. Isaiah Mobley got hot. You know, he was on fire from outside. Isaiah White hit like 7 threes in two of their tournament games. I think that's the key for them. And one of those guys that needs to get going is Max Agbonpolo. He was on fire during the preseason. He was one of their best shooter. He was one of their best players, best scorers, at least, in their preseason scrimmages that they had. So far this season, he's only 4 of 17. I think it's just, you know, early in the season. And same thing with Drew Peterson. He got his first three the other day. He said, you know, his confidence was waning a little bit, but, you know, brought him back up. And I think it's really interesting. Those are two guys I mentioned, but those are two 3-and-D potential guys mm-hmm. in the NBA. if they can knock down threes consistently. And now Drew Peterson can do some different things for you as well, especially at this level. But at the next level, they could both have that potential. And it's going to take some work to get both of them there. But because they're just so long.
Yeah.
You know, they're very Matisse Thybulle-esque as far as they're just super lanky, super long. I mean, Drew Peterson, 6'9". I think Max Akinpolo is listed at 6'8". And they both have wingspans. I wrote a piece on Drew Peterson. I said he's got a pterodactyl wingspan. That's what it seems like. His arms are, you know, when those guys are both in a zone, when USC played their zone last year, they were reaching across the court, basically. The zone just felt like they're, and that was what some of the coaches were saying in the NCAA tournament. I think the Drake coach said, it's like you couldn't find an opening because they're so long. They just reach, you know, the three guys reach all the way across the court. So I think that those guys, I think it, if they can knock down some shots, I think that's really big for them. And I want to give credit to Ethan Anderson. He's been really good from three-point range, and that's something where teams used to just, you know, slouch off of him and not play him at all from the three. But he's 9 of 16, so 56%. He's their best shooter so far.
And just finally, again, just six games. This feels like, obviously, they're rated in the top 20, easily on pace, you know, to make the tournament. Do you have like any idea seating wise, like just that super early? I know it's like super early. Do you feel like you have a gauge of where they could end up in the field?
Obviously, what they do in the Pac-12
will
determine that ultimately. But I think it'll be really interesting in a couple of weeks. They have a road trip where they go to Phoenix and they play Georgia Tech, which is a fascinating matchup because there's two former USC players on that transferred there, Kyle Sturdivant and Jordan Usher. But then they go from there. Go from Phoenix to Oklahoma State and play at Oklahoma State. And I think those two road trip games there, one's technically a neutral court, but I think those could be big wins for them going forward. One for confidence if they can get wins on the road like that, but also I think the Oklahoma State could be pretty decent in the Big 12, especially with the experience they got last year, even if they don't have Cade Cunningham this year. I think they could be decent, so that could be a future good win for them. And Georgia Tech, without Jose Alvarado, I'm curious to see where they haven't looked at much of their roster other than that, but they had a lot of pieces coming back from last year's too. So I think they could be decent in the ACC too. So both of those wins could be really good down the road for USC. So those two games could play a big part in it because there's the rest of the schedule outside of conference leading up, I mean, the rest of the non-conference schedule is just not that great. So you're not going to be an extra quad one or quad two win in there when you're playing Eastern Kentucky or whoever it is they have.
So limited resume boosters for them.
Out of conference. In conference, they could get some.
Right.
But you know, they got Eastern Kentucky, Long Beach State, and UC Irvine outside of those two games that I mentioned. That's the rest of the non-conference schedule, so.
Anything else before we wrap up that maybe I didn't ask you about or something you want to highlight or someone you want to highlight, just anything you want to throw out before we wrap this up?
I mentioned Drew Peterson, and as I said, I wrote a story about his defense. His defensive progression has been amazing. You know, last year, Chris Kapko was on him all the time. It was kind of his guy that he was working with, but he was constantly on him. You got to play better defense. They told him coming into the season, if you don't play better defense, you're going to get passed up by guys and you're not going to play the minutes that you want to play. And so this offseason, he really put in the work. So I think it's really been impressive. The two games down in Anaheim, the two games in that Wooden Legacy, he guarded the other team's best player. Jordan Hall from St. Joseph's, who's a 6'7 point guard. And you might say, oh, a guard from St. Joseph's. He entered the NBA draft last year and ended up withdrawing his name. So he's a talented kid. And then Matt Bradley, who was at Cal previously and averaged like 18 a game for Cal last year. It's 17.5 the year before. He goes to San Diego State. He's their leading scorer this year. He didn't score until there was 80 seconds left in the game. Drew Peterson shut him down the entire game. He got 3 points at the very end of the game when USC was winning by 18, I think. So Drew Peterson completely shut him down. So that was super impressive and just gives them another guy that is going to be super difficult for you know, teams to score on. So I think I want to note that. And I do want to point out a couple of quick breaking news, I guess.
Ooh, okay.
A couple of injury updates. USC is expected to have Isaiah White and Boubacar Coulibaly available tonight when they play Utah. Both those guys, Coulibaly hasn't played since the opener. He's had an ankle injury. Isaiah White missed last week's games in Anaheim because of back spasms. They don't think it's going to be anything serious as far as the back there. It did act up last year a little bit, but you know, not anything long-term like Ethan Anderson's back was last year. But to get those two guys back, I think is big. Just add more depth, you know, as you go into conference, someone gets in foul trouble. And Boubacar Coulibaly, once they get to, you know, once they get past this week, and they get to those three non-conference games against Eastern Kentucky, Long Beach State, UC Irvine, I think you got to get him a ton of minutes. Mm-hmm. He's a freak athlete, and he just needs more and more playing time. So it's unfortunate for him that he missed out on the games at Temple, Florida Gulf Coast, Dixie State, St. Joseph's, you know, those games that they played so far, because all those extra minutes are only going to help him going forward.
Again, as always, world's greatest USC beat basketball writer,
I don't know about all that.
Shotgun Spratling, who I was hosting this, but it's your podcast and you opened it and gave it to me. That's like the biggest flex that you could possibly do. Like, here's my podcast. I brought some random loser on. He's going to interview me. Take it away. That's what it felt like. Flex out.
You're never a random loser. That's Keely from the other room. Exactly.
Notice how he said random. He didn't say like a subtle dig at specific loser, but I'll take it. Thank you for having me on, Shotgun, to interview you.
Chris, thanks so much for coming on and helping me out.
Of course.
Obviously, we didn't have a great format going here. We wanted to throw something out there with conference starting. Obviously, there's so much news going on around USC.
But is there?
Wanted to keep you USC hoops fans, give you guys some love. You know, try to make sure that you guys are taken care of as well, because this team is coming off an Elite Eight run. This team has a chance to make another dramatic run in the NCAA tournament this season with the depth that they have, with the experience they have, and it'll be really interesting to see how the season plays out.
Very quickly, how close was USC to becoming a basketball school officially? Was it close? If 10 is basketball school, where were they, like 7.5? And then it just...
No, and people asked about a basketball school. The thing is, you want to be Florida in the mid-aughts. You want to win a national championship in both. There's no rule that says you can only be one school or the other.
Absolutely.
You can't be
football
or basketball. So you want to be Tim Tebow, Florida, and Joakim Noah, and that Al Horford group that won back-to-back national championships in basketball. That's what you want to be. That's the ideal. That's what you strive for. So we'll see if USC can at least make some strides toward that. They have been recruiting at an absurd level for USC. They're just continuing to build. They play great defense, so they're in every single game. So we'll see what this team can do this year. Should be a fun ride to watch. And fans can come back now. I'm just sorry for you guys that you didn't get to see Evan Mobley in person. The good thing is LA's got two NBA teams, so when the Cavs come in, you can see them when they play the Lakers or the Clippers.
Absolutely.
All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much, Chris, for jumping on with me. We appreciate you guys, and we'll see what USC can do when they open conference play tonight.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.